This is Cats Podcast, episode number 48. Welcome to a new episode of my series on women's health. Today I'm chatting with Laura Plum. Laura is an expert in Ayurveda, Jyotish, mantra, and healing, teaching you how to apply Vedic wisdom for a sacred, sumptuous life. Now, I came across Laura quite a few years ago, and from the beginning, I've loved her warm voice and the wisdom she conveys. In this episode, we're chatting Ayurveda, one of my favorite sciences, and in specific, ojas and women's health for women who are 40 or older. This episode is really a reminder for any woman to take good care of herself, to rest, to take pauses when needed, and to start measuring our days by beautiful moments instead of by how much we got done. Tune in and listen for yourself. You will love Laura as much as I do. One more note, Laura has an online course coming up called Unlock Cosmic Harmony, Integrate Ayurveda and Vedic Astrology. We're chatting about it towards the end of the podcast, so if you're interested, make sure to listen to that, and you'll find a link to it in the show notes where you can book and get all the info. Now, before you dive in, make sure you have subscribed to my show, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please pause for a second, leave a 5-star rating, a short review. This really helps me grow my show, so thank you so, so much. And now, dive in and enjoy this beautiful conversation. Welcome to the show, Laura Plum. Laura is an expert in Ayurveda, Jyotish, mantra, and healing. And today we're going to talk about Ayurveda and the specific topic of ojas and women's health 40 plus. Now, for those of you listening familiar with Ayurveda, you probably know or you have heard the term ojas. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Ayurveda yet or have maybe just had a little glimpse into that science, you probably know about the doshas, or you have heard about the doshas, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. Now, ojas, along with tejas and prana, is basically the root form of those doshas. And instead of depriving us of something or bringing us into imbalance, like the doshas do, the root forms, ojas, prana, and tejas, they basically help us sustain positive vitality. So, now I want to open up the stage for Laura. just that as a little intro. So first of all, hello again. And how did you start your morning? I'm always curious about that. So before we dive into ojas, how did your morning start?
Thank you, Catherine. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be with you. I love the work that you're doing. We had a nice little catch up a little bit earlier, and it was really fun to hear all about your beautiful studies and your teachings and all your great
wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you for, thanks for letting us both share here for this morning. Well, let's see. We had a meeting, actually a breakfast meeting at our home with some friends who are doing some really great work to help keep our city green, our town green, and our oceans blue. So, it was a special breakfast. I can't say it's typical. Usually, I will have a chai. I've got that here. I have a non-caffeinated chai. Uh-huh. I just have spices. I don't have any of the black tea. And so just, cardamom, ginger, cinnamon, those sorts of things, just to help get things moving a little bit in the morning, rev up digestion and circulation. And I add a little bit of oat milk and a little bit of honey to that. That's usually my start. And my husband likes to make a protein smoothie. Ayurveda is not so into smoothies or isolates and powders and things, but he's had some surgery on his jaw. So now he can only sip his food. He can't eat anything that has food. It can only go through a straw. So he starts his day that way. And he always shares with me, just as a loving gesture, he shares with me a little bit of a half a cup of that. And so that's quite nice. I guess as we get older, we all need our protein, and it's just vegan protein with some coconut milk and coconut water and some fruit and things. So That's what I usually have in the morning, just my tea first, and an hour later, a little bit of a smoothie. And then that's good because then I don't need to eat until I have lunch, usually around 11:30, 12. So it's
Oh,
just,
perfect.
yeah. That's
That
my
sounds
morning. One of
lovely.
my practices, or did you want to know what
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. Thank you for sharing. And I mean, that actually brings us into one of my questions because I love to talk about coffee. I love coffee, and I know there's so many different opinions out there, but I always love to talk about it with experts. And I know that a few years back, I heard a podcast from Melissa Ambrosini with you, and you said, oh, you have your coffee with lots of cream. And now you said, oh, you don't drink coffee anymore. So
Right.
fill us in. Why is that? And how would you approach the whole coffee situation?
Interesting because I went into a coffee shop yesterday. I was going to pick
Oh.
up the things for today's breakfast meeting, but and I was thinking, oh, it smells so nice, but I still have, and I had hardly had any sleep the night before, but I still, even though, it used to be that if I didn't sleep the night before, a little coffee would help, perk me up. And now I just have absolutely zero taste for it. And so I'll tell you what was happening. I didn't add cream, I added milk. And the idea with coffee is that it's different things. It's pungent, right? It's bitter. And so pungent and bitter are two of the six tastes in Ayurveda. And these particular tastes help, well, pungent helps with circulation, helps open up the digestive or kick off, you could say, the digestive fires in the body, including metabolic fires. And then the bitter taste is something that helps to purify the body, helps to lighten things up. A lot of people with coffee in the morning, it'll help them with their eliminations as well. So that's kind of the idea of the bitter taste. And so somebody who's very kapha or feeling very kapha, kapha is the dosha in Ayurveda that is made up of the air, sorry, the water and the earth elements. So they tend to be heavy. And in the morning, which is kapha time of day, they might be feeling heavy. I've had many Ayurvedic mentors of mine say, a coffee, one coffee in the morning for a kapha person or somebody with kapha conditions actually is fine. It's absolutely fine. It's not a bad thing, especially if it's organic, fair trade, all the right things. Now, the other thing about coffee, though, is that as the great Dr. Robert Svoboda said, Vata cannot drink coffee with impunity. He says, cannot drink coffee with impunity. He lets that ring out. Echo. And that's coffee will actually stimulate the nervous system, right? And the Vata person who's air and space element, they are already, pretty up. So coffee can just jangle their nerves. The other one who may want to watch the coffee is the Pitta because Pitta wants to avoid pungent. Pungent is in a way too stimulating. Pungent taste, which is basically our spices, our garlics, our onions. The pungent taste is fire, and a pitta person is the fire element with a little bit of water. So they don't usually need more fire. And so basically, if anyone's got a vata or a pitta prakriti or vata or pitta vikriti, which means a current condition, then it's better to reduce or avoid your coffee. But if you love it, I would like to say two things about that. One, love is the greatest medicine of all. So whatever you do, even if it's a habit that you think may not be the best habit for you, do it with love because with the love, you're neutralizing it. One. And two, another very loving thing is the sweet taste. Sweet taste is earth and water elements. And sweet taste is, madhya. So it's this idea of it's like sweet, it's like honey, it's like the nectar of the heart, right? It's a little bit like love, right? Why do we eat sweet things when we're missing our blood, or we just have a breakup? So there's a little bit of love there. Now, adding love in the form of sweet, by that we mean whole milk or cream, or really a good non-dairy milk, to your coffee will neutralize the acidic, what we would refer to again as pungent energy, the heating energy of it. And you could also add a little bit of jaggery. And in South India, when you have coffee, they'll add things like coriander and cardamom and a few spices that also help to neutralize that acidity. So, when I was drinking coffee, I had one cup in the morning. My father drank coffee growing up. He died when I was only in my 20s. And I feel like for many years, that cup of coffee in the morning was sort of a connection to my dad, sort of carrying through the lineage, who was a very special man. And so I would always add, I'd always try to make it Ayurvedic. I would add the whole milk, with the fat balancing the acidic, I would add a little bit of cinnamon or cardamom, right? I'd add a little bit of honey. So it would be kapha busting. Honey is kapha busting. And, you know, it was really just a nice thing to enjoy in the morning. And I just really, really want to say to everybody, let's not use Ayurveda as a way to beat ourselves up, right? Let's use Ayurveda in a way that it was never meant to be used. It's meant to support you. So look for what nourishes you and avoid what depletes you. And if it's a beautiful cup of coffee in the morning that's made in a way that balances you and your dosha, sure, go ahead and enjoy it. For me, I got to a point where I was experiencing some high pitta, and that was showing up in terms of eczema and allergies, skin issues. And so I went and did a week with Dr. Vasant Lad in the Blue Ridge Mountains
Oh,
here in
wow.
the East Coast. And, you know, we couldn't be drinking any coffee. So I just stopped. I never had any side effects. And from that moment on, I just haven't wanted it. And interestingly enough, as you and I are speaking, it's warm weather outside, but I still love my basically a spiced tea and just a little bit of oat milk and a little bit of honey. And it's even on a hot day, it just feels very nourishing. So, yeah.
Lovely. Thank you so much for this. I love this perspective, of not depriving ourselves of something that we might really love and just, preparing it in a way that serves us better so we can, embrace it even more, I would say. So that's really lovely. And I also think when things are ripe, when you're ready to let go of something, it will eventually come. So for me, I know until now, my goodbye from coffee hasn't come yet. I mean, I had, stretches, 3 weeks, 4 weeks without coffee a few times, but well, until now, I just love it so much. So I just try to be mindful about it. I usually drink it with lots of organic cream, which is really great here in Austria. So it tastes good, it's local, and yeah, and that helps me to balance out this fiery element because I feel it, especially in summer. And when I was in Bali in February, I felt it too. I just couldn't handle so much coffee, like literally half a cup would send me to the edge. So, yeah.
Well, in a way, coffee is like in Europe is a little bit like tea in England. It's a sort of it's a social exchange, right? It's we gather around maybe the morning coffee, or we gather around the afternoon tea in England. And so, you know, that is also a very important contribution to our ojas, which I know we're going to talk about in a moment, is that social time,
Yes.
that shared
Yeah.
experience.
Yeah, for me it's I have it in the morning actually on my own most of the time, sometimes with my partner, but most of the time on my own, and then I'm journaling and I just love to sit there, either look out into the garden or be outside, and yeah, it's just what really fills my cup. I love it.
Nice.
Yes, so let's switch to ojas. So first of all, for well, especially the people listening who haven't heard about ojas, what is ojas?
What is ojas is such a great question, and there's actually many answers. A lot of Sanskrit words can't be, we can't just give the Sanskrit word and then the English word or the Sanskrit word and the German word. I'm sure German is probably closer in a way in its precision to Sanskrit and better able to translate some of these terms. But certainly in English, we need a lot of words, a lot of explanations to describe this the power of these words in many cases. So you mentioned earlier that there's something prana, tejas, ojas. And prana, of course, many people are familiar with that term. It means our life force. Truly, it means the energy of consciousness itself, the energy of consciousness that is within you. It's not just energy. So sometimes we can feel, oh, I feel so low energy today. Other days we wake up and we're just full of energy, right? And so really people were studying, what is it that gives us this energy, right? And why is it so variable? Why does it get depleted? That's what we study in Ayurveda, is that prana, that life force energy. But remembering that it's if you were just energy, then you could just be a light bulb. You're more than energy, you are conscious energy. And that's what I think is important to remember about prana. It's conscious energy. And consciousness is that which heals you. It's the consciousness within you that is your wholeness. that is your, you could almost say that's your dharma, in the sense that dharma is sort of right alignment and the true sort of matrix, you might say, the temple, the wholeness, the perfection of you almost, you might say. So that's consciousness. Consciousness is that which helps to heal us. So all we're doing in Ayurveda is trying to stimulate that inner healer. And prana is the flow of consciousness. So it's the flow of that inner healing force. Tejas is radiance. Tejas is the light within you. It's different than the Agni or the fire within you, which is the digestive fires and metabolism. It's related to fire, but it's more the light that a fire gives off. So it's the light of your mind. It's the light of your eyes. It's the light, you know, in your skin if you have a glow. It's the light of your heart, that part of you that's able to take experiences, metabolize, and turn that into wisdom. And so that's Tejas. And Ojas is, in this sense, Ojas is that part of us that relates to structure and longevity, the part of us that seeks connection, wholeness, that seeks to move from fragmentation, right, to integration. And so Ojas is, it's also said to be these 8 drops of nectar that your mother gives you when you're in utero. She plants these 8 drops of nectar, that Ojas, in your own heart. So Ojas gives us a physical expression, which is again, musculoskeletal system, the cushioning in our joints, the adipose tissue and under our skin, that which makes us comfortable in our bodies, but also that which makes us comfortable in our lives. So it can be that heart idea, can be patience and general contentment. Prana, Tejas, and Ojas are the positive forms that we're seeking to cultivate, perhaps through yoga class. We hear a lot in yoga, you know, cultivate prana, but a balanced yoga class will also cultivate Tejas through maybe a drishti. Where are you putting your attention through the class? Maybe through mantra. Mantra and meditation are great ways to cultivate Tejas, an inner light. And then we cultivate Ojas through deep shavasana or cooling poses towards the end of practice. And even really through bhakti, or that feeling of devotion, that feeling of offering yourself to something greater. It doesn't have to be religious or even spiritual, but just having something that you're doing your practice for that makes you feel almost tingly, right? That you are part of all that is. And the imbalance of prana, tejas, ojas is what we refer to in Ayurveda as the doshas, vata, pitta, kapha. So prana, tejas, ojas don't necessarily go out of balance. They're always positive forms. But because prana relates, because it's flow, it relates to the air element or the wind. And when there's an imbalance of wind, that gives us vata dosha. Vata, remember, again, is air and space elements. And tejas relates to, it isn't fire, but it relates to that glow, or you could say, of the fire, the light of the fire. And so it relates in Ayurveda to the pitta dosha, which is fire with some water. And then ojas can relate to kapha, kapha being earth and water. Now, anybody who's vata dosha with lots of air and space, they want to cultivate ojas. The clarity here and the distinction to make is that we're never trying to cultivate an opposite dosha. Dosha always is basically, it means imbalance. Mm. What we're trying to cultivate is more prana or more tejas or more ojas or maybe all three in perfect balance. Or perfect harmony is better. Balance always feels to me like a seesaw or a teeter-totter. And if you're in perfect balance, then both of you have your feet in the air, right? So we want balance to be grounded. And I think harmony is a better term. And so just thinking about that, if you're kapha, you want more prana, you want to get moving, and you want more tejas, you want more light. And so that's why I think it's really helpful to understand prana, tejas, ojas in the context of the doshas, though generally prana, tejas, ojas are taught through yoga and the doshas are taught in Ayurveda. So basically, to answer your question, what is ojas? It's all the good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's all the stuff that helps us feel good in our lives and in our bodies.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that. I mean, I picked the topic of ojas because I feel that a lot of women are maybe not in their 20s, but from the mid-30s onwards or so, are getting depleted in ojas, or we feel burned out. And I somewhere heard about this, well, this image, you know, if you have a candle, ogis would be like the wax in the candle. And without the wax, there's no light. So that's, and I found this image really good because it helps us understand what ogis does. So if there's no ogis, if we deplete this vital reserve, we cannot live, we cannot shine our lights, we cannot thrive in life. And I feel that this is really an issue for a lot of women, maybe also men, I don't know. But and our society is really, well, I don't want to say keeping us deprived, but it's working in a way that leads us to depleting our ogis if we're not mindful about it. So that was the main reason why I picked ogis, and I wanted to chat about that with you, and why it's so important for women to have that vital resource filled up.
Yeah, one of the things I intend to do a deep research on once the time opens up is what happens to people when they deplete their ogis. But what I'm seeing and noticing in the world is a lot of people who are burning their ogis, sort of burning the candle. The more you burn the candle, the more you deplete the wax, right? And so the tejas would be that candle or the glow of the candle. And the way that the candle flickers is more of the prana. And what the candle is fed on is the prana, the air that it's taking in, right? So, but the ogis is the candle that sort of holds it in place. And of course, if we're always burning that midnight candle, we're going to deplete our ogis. So let's start by saying, how do we cultivate ogis? Mm-hmm. We cultivate ogis primarily through good, wholesome food and good, deep rest. And I call it productive rest. Somebody said, how is your rest productive? You're resting so you can't be productive. But the rest that is not just, you're constantly sort of just on the edge of waking up. But the rest that is really deep sleep. The rest that is not just deep sleep, but the rest where you go to sleep by 10 p.m. and you're up around 6 a.m. Why? Because from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. in the morning, your body is not only cleansing and repairing, it's specifically balancing the dosha of pitta. And pitta is everything that causes heat, abrasions, inflammation, right? And in a way, rust, right? The cells that can get rusty. And that's why we take our antioxidants. So that 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. is really crucial if you want to have a healthy heart, right? Healthy cholesterol, healthy blood flow, healthy eyes and healthy skin, and all the things that Pitta Dosha governs. From 2 a.m. in the morning to 6 a.m., you're now, your body's balancing, metabolizing, pacifying the Vata Dosha. So also, if you want your mind and your joints and your flow within your body all to function in harmonious flow, then you want to be asleep from 2 to 6 a.m. So that, all of that will balance the Pitta and the Vata. And then people say, well, what about Kapha? Well, sleep is Kapha, right? Sleep is Kapha. Waking up at 6 is how we balance the Kapha Dosha. Get up and be awake during the Kapha time of day, which is, again, 6 to 10 a.m. So we cultivate ojas in good, wholesome food, eating it at the same time every day. Try to regulate your meal times. Eating your last meal at least 3 hours before bed. So there's time to digest the food before your body starts working on metabolism once you're asleep. And then the third thing is some practice of devotion or faith or something that you can really, it could even be selfless service in some way, connecting with others. Sometimes we say bhakti yoga, singing, just feeling that sense in your heart that it's, your heart is alive, that you are alive to the world, its beauty. Even beauty is something that really feeds ojas. So going to an art museum, art, listening to beautiful music, which I know you get to do so much of in Vienna with all those beautiful churches that have those beautiful concerts, but also going into nature and seeing beautiful things in nature, it really feeds our ojas. So we absolutely need as women to slow down, to stop and smell the roses. We've got to stop and slow ourselves down so that we can feel our lives, so that we can feel what we're feeling, so that we can really cultivate an intimate relationship with ourselves, because you're sacred, right? And you matter. And you have to do that for yourself if you want anybody to actually reciprocate. So that's how we're going to cultivate ojas. Now, when we don't cultivate ojas, instead we're burning the midnight oil, we're really either moving a lot, on the go all the time, or very focused. What I've been noticing is that people who have great brains and have really applied their brains in very intense ways. For instance, it turns out that in Asia, many kids are wearing glasses starting the age of 9 or 10, and they're developing a nearsightedness. And nearsightedness is on the rise everywhere in the world. And they're talking about the fact that more children are being, you know, the studies that they're doing, not just on the computer, but the studies that they're doing, this intense focus on study, add to it now the phones and the computers, right? And there's a burnout, right? The ojas in the optic nerves. The whole brain is basically meant to be healthy fat. That relates to ojas. Synaptic firings, right, will be tejas and prana, but the container of your brain is ojas. And so if we're overusing the brain, right, if we're staying up late to study day after day, it's okay once in a while, but day after day after day, if we're doing that on a computer, the other thing we're noticing is that people in their age of 60 or 70 who have been in high stress executive positions are getting more of those, you know, what I'm going to just call brain burnouts or illnesses of cognitive disrepair, like Parkinson's, right? Like certain kinds of dementia. And it's, you know, you've just got, as long as you are 30, I mean, we need to start this young. You're seeing this is already affecting children. So we need to start young with healthy food, eating at the same time. The best, number one, most important thing anyone can do for their health is cook your meals at home, because then you control the ingredients, you make sure they're organic or they're sustainably grown. You're controlling the how you're making it. Ideally, cooking your meals will help with digestion, and that will help you really derive the nutrients from the food that we need. And that ultimate end product of digestion and metabolism is good ojas. And by the way, so ojas is said to be the final end product of all the metabolic fires in the body. We talk about the seven tissues of the body. And so after the seven tissues each take their nutrients, what remains gives you ojas. And that is the invisible eighth tissue that is our immunity. So when ojas is strong, immunity is strong. When ojas is strong, again, you feel good in your body. But that means, it does mean something. It means around the age of 40, women at least by that age should be pausing for a moment and saying, how do I want to go into the next decade or the next, you know, second, third, two-thirds of my life? And if you want to be healthy at 50, at 60, at 70, which you absolutely can be, then you're going to just need to put a little bit of time to it. Maybe it's just a little bit of 15 extra minutes a day. Once you get going with this, it's once you get into your patterns and habits, it's second nature and it's easy to do. But give yourself the time, because you matter. Women are upholders of the world. Usually we might have families. We have maybe a brother, a sister, a mother, a father, even if we don't have partners and children. But then if we do, we've got that. If we're working, oftentimes we're the ones who are also caring emotionally and physically for the people that we work with. So women are an important part of the fabric of our world, right? And so you take care of you. And definitely at the age of 40 is when we're heading towards menopause and we start to feel depleted. And it's a perfect time to stop, give yourself a 3-day retreat, go into nature, do some and ask, how can I cultivate ojas every single day for the rest of my life so that you can have a sacred, sumptuous life and live to a ripe old age and feel great in your body all the way to the end?
I love that. Thank you. Yes. I think it's so important. So a few things I want to touch on. First of all, yes. And I mean, that's also Ayurvedic knowledge, right? Things that you could easily do, or you would easily like tuck away in your 20s or beginning of your early 30s, you wouldn't notice, you know, when you're staying up late for 3 days or so. But then once you hit 35 or 40, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't do that anymore. And you really feel it because it has accumulated over time. So I love your wake up call for anyone listening, around 40 or being 40 plus like me. And yeah, so that's amazing. And also very practical tips, you know, just go to bed maybe a little bit earlier so you can make your bedtime 10 p.m. And I personally love that. So my sweet spot for bedtime is 9:30. It's really a perfect time for me to go to bed. And yeah, I just wake up more refreshed when I sleep well. Mm-hmm. And but also when you touched screen time, I think it's so easy to just be more off screens. It's really a simple tip anyone can do. Just say, okay, maybe you make up a rule for yourself. When you're 2 hours on a screen, you take at least 15 minutes outside or 30 minutes. And so you get a balance, and eventually you probably have the urge to be more outside or more off the screen. And also food. Let's touch on food a little bit more. Are there any specific foods? I mean, in my mind, ghee is popping up. Would that be something to incorporate in one's diet when you want to build ojas? Are there like certain foods where you would say, okay, this is a good one, this is a good one, this is a good one?
Yeah. Well, let's just address anybody who has a fear of gaining weight, especially once we hit perimenopause, menopause. It is typical that a woman will put on some weight. Now, that isn't necessarily a bad thing. It depends on how much, but the weight that goes on around that age is also a weight that's helping to balance the next phase of life. So just to cover phases of life, in Ayurveda, again, we've got these three doshas. Your first phase of life is Kapha dosha. You know, babies are so squishy and cute and sweet and very Kapha. And then around the time of puberty, we move into Pitta time of life. And every time a dosha is, we're transitioning, then the energies are unsettled. So you can see that in teenagers, they can be quite hormonal. They can be quite passionate. They might have skin issues. That, again, is a Pitta thing. They might be rebellious against their parents. Pitta can be quite fierce. But then it settles, right? And so that Pitta is the majority of the years of our lives. It goes until menopause. And then we start to go into the Vata phase of life. And in the Vata phase of life, we have to be careful that we are keeping our cognitive function strong, that we are keeping our bones and our joints strong, and that we're keeping our digestion strong. The five senses also, we want to keep them sharp and alive. They start to diminish. And so a little bit of fat is going to help protect the bones, the joints, the nerves, the brain. And so first of all, I think we just need to learn to love some of these things and not be measured by external, invented, I think, fabricated ideas about what beauty is for a woman. You're beautiful. I feel like women are beautiful just because they are. And so starting there, I think also then I would like to say that putting on weight is not necessarily a function of exactly what you're eating. Now, of course, if you're just eating junk food all day long, of course, that's going to be a contributing factor. But mainly if you're eating a healthy diet, it's not that eating fat makes you fat. It's digestive impairment that can lead, right? If you're eating right, then it's digestive impairment that's going to, and or lack of movement, right? So that's the fire element, and the air element will need to be restored. And that's where good digestion, proper movement can help us balance this. But good, healthy fat, something like ghee, something like coconut oil, something like avocados in your diet, good, you know, little handful of nuts every single day, olive oil as well. These are really great things to include. And depending on, again, your dosha and your current situation, if you're already very kapha, you don't need so much of that. But if you're very vata, then I'll often recommend internal and external oleation. And even oils are considered the water element. So even oiling your head and your hair is a great way of putting water on the hot person, the pitta person, because heat rises. So cold, as for the pitta person, not cold. I know the cold baths and the cold water plunges are really popular now. That's not good for vata because that can put out their fire. But for pitta, that's great. So, in terms of food, it's mainly these foods that are either of the sweet taste. Sweet tasting foods are the majority of what we eat. They're the foods that help build tissue and strength. They are, again, things like nuts, healthy fats, but also fruits, especially juicy fruits, tropical fruits, bananas, mangoes, papayas, coconuts. But also, sweet taste includes milk, dairy, meat, and vegetables. So, again, most of what's on your plate is going to be that sweet taste. And those foods, if they're properly digested, will help to build ojas. And I think also just even taking a break, maybe in the middle of the afternoon, a person can take a break and go for a walk around the block. Now that we had COVID, which wasn't a good thing, one of the benefits is that more people are working on Zoom and can work from home. And if that's the case, maybe you take your dog for a walk, or maybe you take your afternoon tea and you just go step outside and get your feet into the soil, right? So just little breaks here and there, even a breathing break, even lying down and resting your legs on the wall, hands on your belly and feeling yourself breathe for 5 minutes. These kinds of things also build ojas. So it's food, but it's also pauses, breaks, right? Mindful moments throughout the day.
I love that you're really emphasizing the importance of rest and breaks here because, I grew up in that way and it's really hard, unlearning this program of, oh my gosh, if it's not a productive day, it's not a good day. So, it's and be less hard on myself when I take breaks, when I have an afternoon, maybe even a whole afternoon on the couch. So I'm slowly getting there, I would say. But I feel for a lot of women, it's always good to hear that it's okay to take a break, that it's okay to take a little rest, and that it's really helping to be in good health, to be well.
I think it's important that we stop measuring ourselves or measuring our days by how much we got done, but rather maybe by how much we loved or how much we were inspired or how much joy we felt, right? How many people did we touch or were we touched by? Let's measure our days by the quality of our experiences rather than how much we got done. Because to me, I actually think this is an industrial revolution. Dosha, almost you might say, this is something that happened with the Industrial Revolution, where all of a sudden we became worker bees, and there were people who just wanted to see how much we could get done so they could maximize their profit. And I feel like this is, we don't know that that's where that thought is coming from, but it is a thought that comes from you need to be productive so somebody can make money off you. And who wants to be that? We're not slaves, right? In that sense, we need to decolonize our thinking so that we're free. And true freedom is, sure, you can be productive and you can be creative, but that's not how you measure yourself. The quality of who you are, the value of who you are, isn't, well, how much did you get done today? The value of who you are is what's in your heart. What is your character? What are the qualities of your relationships? How much time do you spend going up at night and looking at the stars? How much time do you spend getting up in the morning and watching the sunrise? What would people say about you? How much time do you spend just getting down on the ground and playing with a child? Right? How much time do you spend and petting a dog? These are not only this is the measure of you. And not only that, this is what cultivates ojas. And so if you could stop and not just think, if I take this 5 minute break or if I get a better night's sleep, I'll have more energy tomorrow. But if you could also think, I will have a better life overall. Not just tomorrow, but every day forward. So I love the human body because it's so generous. It's generous and it's generative. And every little bit you give to it will reward you exponentially. If you do a cleanse one day and all you have is, say, congee, right? Or you even just have a soup cleanse, just sipping broth, your body will love you for that. I mean, it's just one day you're doing that, but your body will come. it can completely repair your digestive system in that one day. So the body wants wholeness. It wants to be healthy, whole, alive, full of energy. Every little bit we give it helps it move radically in the direction of who you really are meant to be. And you're meant to be alive, full of energy, full of joy, and creative. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. I really invite anyone listening who wants to build their OGIS to approach you, maybe just take a week or take a month and say, okay, look, just as Laura said, I'm approaching my life from a perspective of how many beautiful moments can I gather in a day? And yeah, I guess that really just this practice will help you build up so much OGIS and really shift the perception of yourself and how you're approaching life and how you do things.
Yeah, I love that you just, let's just put it in this one thing. Just how many experiences of beauty can you have in one day? That's lovely. Yeah.
Thank you. We touched on oleating inside and outside, and Abhyanga is actually one thing I want to chat with you about, because I've tried it, but then I lost track again. And yeah, just it would be lovely if you could talk us through the procedure of Abhyanga, and there are different oils for different doshas. So people, women especially, know what to do and why it's so important to oil your body, especially once you hit 40. And what it does in the body, leaving the oil on for so long, for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing is, again, I don't want to make it too complex for people. So it's a very simple practice. And once you get used to doing it, it's like brushing your teeth. You don't forget, you don't want to not do it. You know, it just doesn't feel right. So we will try to practice Abhyanga. It's one of the Dinacharyas. Dinacharya means our daily practices. And Abhyanga is one of the really the most important. And that's because you're basically applying, hopefully, a warm oil to your whole body and massaging. So we massage in circular motions around the joints and up and down strokes on the bones. And you can start top and go all the way down to your feet and then back up. People will talk about moving from the heart and out, or moving from the extremities in. The important thing is that what's happening with the Abhyanga is, A, you're warming up the body. Overnight, you've been lying, literally just lying, maybe you roll over a little bit, but mostly you've just been stagnant. So this is a great way to get prana flowing and to get the body warming up internally. And it's also great because the oil will nourish the tissues. Number one oil is sesame oil. Its molecule is very strong. It's a heavy oil, but it's strong. I mean, sorry, its molecule is small. And so because of that, it can really penetrate the pores on your skin and go into the deeper layers of the tissue. There's actually research that shows that sesame oil, Abhyanga every single day, can help reverse dementia and Parkinson's. And that's even before you're adding any medicated herbs or turmeric to the oils.
That's so incredible, right? I mean, it's all there and the solutions are so simple.
Yeah. And that's what we mean by getting into the deeper tissues, because the nerve tissue, the neurological tissue, is one of the deepest tissues. It also gets to reproductive tissue. It gets to bone. And so it's really a beautiful thing to do, especially with anyone who has any vata. Again, it's like water. It's got a heavy feeling. It's nourishing. It's warming. One of the words for oiling the body is sneha or snehana. And that means oil, but that also means love. So it's another way of giving yourself some love. I, in a course that I gave once, and it was sort of an autumn cleanse, and one of the things I was recommending is a daily Abhyanga with sesame oil. People can also use coconut oil, which is, I think, a better oil for summer. And it's certainly a better oil for Pitta dosha. Sesame oil is best for Vata and Kapha people because it is slightly heating. It's better coconut, which is cooling for Pitta. But we were doing a daily Abhyanga, and I had men and women in my course. And at the end, a man raised his hand. And he said, "I just want to let you know, I've been doing the Abhyanga every day." And he's like, "I'm 45 and I I've let myself go. I haven't been exercising, I haven't been eating well. And this cleanse has helped me really restore. But of all the things on this cleanse, the food, the diet, the recipes, the thing I've loved the most is this daily Abhyanga. Because instead of in the morning looking at myself and saying, oh, you blah, 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 negative slurs against oneself, he started to approach himself in the Abhyanga with love. And he would say, you know, thank you, shoulder, for helping me move my arms so I can reach out and touch and create and make, right? Thank you, knees. And he just would thank each part of his body, just thank you, stomach, for even though you're chubby, thank you for helping me digest. And I've grown so much self-love, and it's utterly changed everything in my life. I go into my work now, I go into my day now with a certain kind of self-confidence. I feel more grounded, I feel more open. People are reflecting back to me that I'm showing up better in relationships, right?
Wow.
Daily Abhyanga. Right, it changed. It really changed things for him. And I've checked in with him, and he still does it every single day. He's really devoted to it. So
that's
it's
amazing. And that from a man, if I can say so, it's like, wow.
Yes.
That's really incredible. Yeah,
from
and
a man.
it ties perfectly into our OGIS topic, because it's part of building OGIS, building that love for yourself and yeah, that deeper connection to yourself, caring for yourself, and yeah, starting your day like that,
right,
in a self-caring, self-loving way is really beautiful.
Right. And you can do it. You can leave it on. You know, you can wrap yourself in a towel or some sort of a robe and leave it on for 20 minutes. Go make your tea or your coffee. Come back and jump in the shower. The reason we do it before the shower, not after, is so that if you wait 20 minutes, even if you wait 10 minutes, it will absorb into the skin and it'll go into the body and be spread around into the deeper tissues. In a way that, of course, if you were to take it into by the mouth, if you're going to have an oral ghee or coconut oil or something, well, then the stomach, the digestion is going to just block some of the flow of that into the deeper body. So it's a great way of getting these oils in. Of course, the longer you can wait, if you can wait up to 20 minutes, better. But even I would say to people, don't avoid doing it just because you don't have 20 minutes. Still, you can do it, wait 5 minutes and then get in the shower. Try never to have hot water on the head. It should always be cool or cold. Water to the body can be warm. But then that'll get rid of the superficial oils. So then when you get dressed, you're not oiling up your clothes, right? Plus, of course, once you get into the shower, the steam, the warmth of the shower will help to open the pores, and then the oil goes even more deeply in. So it's good science. They knew what they were talking about, these Ayurvedis.
Yes. So if someone has joint problems, then this would also be a good remedy, right? Doing Abhyanga, especially with sesame oil.
Definitely, because if you have joint problems, we mentioned earlier accumulation, it's an accumulation of a dosha in the joint. So even just massaging is going to help to break up some of that accumulation so that, again, the bloodstream and the lymphatic can come and carry it away. With an oil, which helps to lubricate, because joints tend to be vata, they tend to run dry, they need that oil. And then you might look for a medicated oil. There are certain Ayurvedic oils that are specific for joints. They'll have things like boswellia, certain herbs that really, really target joint health. So yeah, you can look for that. You can go to, there's different Ayurvedic companies now that sell things, and you can just Google joint health, but make sure that you're finding your Ayurvedic products from a really reliable trader, because something like Banyan Botanical we have here in the US, they not only make sure absolutely everything is organic, but also they idea of fair trade. They're not exploiting anybody in India or any farmer anywhere. And I really appreciate that, because, you know, what we put in our body also has that energy. And so we want to make sure it's, the energy is sattvic, right? Sattvic means pure and whole, balanced and clean. We don't want to be carrying the energy of harm.
Yes. Yes. Such a good point. And also, just reminding people that the skin is our biggest organ, and so everything we put on it, we take directly in. I mean, that's basically what we talked about when you walked us through the process of Abhyanga, that your body absorbs everything into the deep tissues, into the bones, into everything. So really be mindful what you put on your body. And I mean, we're talking here about oils where it's probably, well, less critical than with some body lotions, because I mean, just look at the labels. You don't understand half of it or more what's on the ingredient label. So you're really better off with a good oil.
Yeah. You're really better off with a good oil. Absolutely. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much. One last point I wanted to touch on is you have an upcoming course, a 7-week course. Do you want to briefly walk us through that so people listening can think about joining?
I have a really fabulous course coming up. It's with the Shift Network, and we're talking about, or we're working on, this integration of Ayurveda and Jyotish, which I just love, because to me, Jyotish, which is Vedic astrology, where we're looking at the sky and we're looking at the influences of the planets upon us. For instance, we all know when the moon is full, it might be harder to sleep. And so while these planetary influences are more invisible and intangible than the Ayurveda, which talks about earth, water, fire, we know what those are. We can work with them. It's still, Ayurveda is all about harmonizing the energies of nature. And so Jyotish is really about harmonizing the energies of the cosmos. It's sort of an expanded version of Ayurveda. So the course is going to be really amazing. It's Vedic wisdom to ignite your inner light, synergizing Ayurveda with the lunar cycles for healing and renewing mind, body, and spirit. We're going to look at the foundations of Vedas, sun, and the spectrum of light, both in the world around us, how it affects us, and that light within us. We're going to look at the moon as a reflector of light and how the moon influences us. In Ayurveda, we see that the moon is a cooling energy. The moon governs the mind, but it also governs hormones and rasa dhatu, which is the blood plasma, as well as lymph. It, all the watery fluids within us, including menstruation and breastfeeding and all of that. So moon is quite powerful. And if we have a good relationship with the moon, it's like having a good relationship with a mother, right? It feels like you're very loved, you're very nourished, you're very held. And I think at any age, that's something that's important for all of us. And then we're going to go into working with nature, working with the elements, working with the doshas, balancing the light and the water, the sun and the moon, mm-hmm. the heat, the cooling elements. We'll look at nakshatras, which is where the moon goes every single day. And you'll find out where the moon was when you were born, which nakshatra the moon was with. That's said to describe the essence of you, why you're here, what your unique gifts are. So that's really fun. We'll also talk about the tithis, which is the waxing and the waning of the moon, and different daily practices we can do to just really cultivate this idea that we live in a sacred world, that we belong to this world, that you weren't born by accident, you're alive on purpose, and that nature loves you, that the cosmos is friendly and has a place for you. And so it's just really about creating some simple daily practices. We'll also have a whole course on food and the six tastes in the food. We're going to do a course on the rays and the days. So there's 7 rays of light, there's 7 days of the week, and how, again, we work with that. Simple, simple things that just help us weave into a more sacred web, so we really feel our life becoming more sumptuous, more grounded, and hopefully more joyful, more meaningful. Mm. Yeah.
Sounds really beautiful. And I find it so tempting because we already had a brief chat about it, because it crisscrosses path with my yantra yoga studies. So I'm really tempted to join.
It's all about this Vedic wisdom, the yoga, the Ayurveda, the Jyotish, which is all about understanding the light and cultivating that within, and cultivating practices, but understanding that every single thing, food, trees, everything is a relationship, right? The trees exhale so we can inhale. That's a relationship with trees, even when we're not thinking about it, even when we're not in nature. Every day we sit down to a meal, we cultivate a relationship with nature, who is seeking to nourish us, to strengthen us, so that we can have this healthy, whole life and lots of energy to meet it. Right? And yantras, that work that you did, which is so beautiful, is really looking at the rays of light, the patterns of light, the patterns of light and the matrix of light. The yantra is the matrix of light. And a Jyotish chart is a yantra. It's the yantra of you. It shows you the matrix of light, energy, and intelligence that was not only there in that split moment when you were born, but that you are the coming alive of that, right? So it's beautiful to look at your yantra work and to understand that there's a yantra that describes you, that is literally you. It's not just something out there. It's not just ancient wisdom. It's not just something in the sky. You are the coming alive of that yantra, that matrix, that light.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all so beautiful. So looking forward to that. And it's in September, right? You said September is the course starting, and then 7 weeks. We link to it so that you'll find a link to it in the show notes where you can find all the info, where you can sign up, etc. And I'll also link to Laura's website, of course, and the Instagram.
Just to be clear, we have we're going to have an introductory class September 26th. And then the course starts, the free introductory class is September 26th, and then the course begins.
Okay.
And then it's 7 weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's fun to have you.
I'll definitely think about it. Perfect. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just for women to, again, I'll say it again, just to have full faith in you, to know that you matter, to know that you're valued, to know that we need you. And we need you to take care of you so that you'll be around again to be that beacon, that energy, that emissary of the light and the love that you bring to this world. We need your light. We need your love. So take good care.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Catherine. So great to be with you.
Thanks so much for listening. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode, that you got some good wisdom out of it. Whatever it was, if there were any aha moments for you, anything that was particularly helpful, please let us know. Leave us a comment over on Instagram where I'll be posting some snippets of this conversation, or send us a message. We're really happy to hear from you. And well, now enjoy your day or your evening. To see you on the next one.